Back in 1970, under the pastorate of Reverend Donald Goodwine, the Board of Deacons of First Baptist Church, located on Waterford Street in Edinburgh, presented a proposal to the congregation to establish a building fund with the intent to relocate, to construct a larger church on a more spacious area outside of town. When I initially heard the news, I thought, what? How can this be? I had been attending my beloved church since 1949, the church where I had received a wonderful biblical foundation through Sunday school and worship services, vacation Bible school, and many youth activities, the church where I was saved and baptized, the church where I met my beloved husband during our college years and where we were married, the church where my firstborn was rocked and nurtured in its nursery. The idea of such a transition for me was not to be readily accepted, and there was an immediate desire to embrace that old chorus, I shall not be moved. Nevertheless, within 18 months, the church had purchased a newly built home, the future parsonage, on 5 acres of land just north of Edinburgh. I guess I could accept this because a parsonage did not necessarily mean a new church. I may have been nostalgically dragging my feet, but the Lord was moving forward. Reverend Goodwine, who resigned in 1973, had fulfilled his role of setting things in motion for a new church, and finances indicated the building program could continue. God soon sent the right individual, Reverend Dick Dahlquist, to be our pastor during the time of our new church construction, beginning in the spring of 1974. Yes, I observed that first shovel of soil being ceremoniously removed by the deacons, my traitor husband Daniel included. The Lord soon showed me that this was an exciting time, that I could treasure my many special memories of my old church, but must look forward to God's greater work, because I know, and you know, that the church is so much more than a building. The Lord was so very faithful in providing just the right 2 qualified pastors to transition us from our former church to this present one, with more space and ministry opportunities. Our new building put us on 1 level for all activities, including a gym for Awana and many church events. No longer did we have to deal with basement Sunday school rooms divided by cumbersome movable wood partitions. Beyond having a beautiful, spacious sanctuary for worship, we no longer had to worry about bats flying unexpectedly from the baptistry during a sermon. And we now had ample off-street church parking with no neighborhood complaints. Since those days, several ministers have been called to Edinburgh Baptist to serve, and both on the mountaintops and through the valleys, God's faithfulness to this church has remained to accomplish his purposes and to be continued as we begin our 5th decade in this building under Pastor Ryan Grafton's capable leadership. I am so thankful to be a part of a church that I have known and loved for over 65 years, to have witnessed the groundbreaking ceremony of this building, and to be here for this celebration today. Do I still love my old church? Yes. Do I still very much dislike change? Yes. But am I the one in control of God's plans and purposes? Absolutely not.
Thank you. We have another testimony and remembrance. And Lou Sherwood, come on up.
Thinking about the times, well, first of all, thank you, Pastor. I didn't mean to forget that. Thinking about the times 40 years ago, it was surprising to me to realize how much our congregation has changed in these 40 years. It's perfectly natural. Many of the people I recall have died. Others have moved away, and still others have found other congregations with whom to worship. Fortunately, the Lord has also blessed us with many new people. But today, I think it is important for us to remember who was here then, and for those of us who are here now to give thanks to their part in the gift we have of this building. Without the collective effort of the congregation 40 years ago, we would not be here today. And being in this building today is a big improvement from where we were then. My memories of the Waterford Street Church building are a little vague and confused. Mostly I recall it being old and small. I remember the basement was divided into rooms, although I didn't remember, as Darlene said, that the room walls were movable. I was going to comment that when Linda and I got married in the Waterford Street Church, we had to have our, well, I thought we had to have our reception in the Methodist Church next door. After the conversation Darlene and I had last week, knowing that the wall's removable, I presume my mother-in-law had other reasons for wanting the reception at the Methodist Church. But I thought it was because of the size. In any case, it was an uncomfortable situation. The bathrooms for the church were in the basement. And I remember Sunday school rooms all over the church. The ones in the basement, clearly. There were also room or Sunday school meetings in the balcony above the sanctuary. And I know that our senior high Sunday school class was in this same kind of room that we have here that led into the baptistry. The new building came to be from the work of many people, but as I recall, and unfortunately I didn't remember, it was started with Reverend Goodwin, but as I recall, the effort was led by the vision, planning, and physical effort of Richard Warnsice. It was very much a group effort, but he was certainly a strong proponent of moving out here and getting the work done. And I do remember some controversy with the decision to come here. Even beyond Darlene's reservations, I remember that the amount of money was involved was very large for our budget, and there was concern if investing in a new church building was how those gifts should be used. There was also concern that we were abandoning the borough in our proximity to the college and to people who had to walk to church. Only people who drove would now be able to come to our new building. But in the end, after many meetings, prayer, and fundraising, we decided to move. Linda's concerned that my use of the word fundraising suggests we had car washes and candy sales and that sort of thing. Certainly not. That was not at all the case. What I recall of fundraising was special offerings and an encouragement to give to the building fund over and above our regular giving. And I remember the process was very long. Just as Darlene suggested, the plans for the church began well before any groundbreaking. I remember being in high school at the first time that I learned of prospects of coming out here. I don't remember enough about how the project was planned or how the money was arranged. I know that the project plans, however, depended on the heavy involvement of the congregation to complete the construction work. Anytime I was here for work, which really was not so very often to give me any unique perspective on the events, there were lots of other people here too. Sadly, I don't remember them all. Of those I remember, Reverend Dahlquist was always here, Larry Finazzo, Kenny Parker, Warren Nelson, Art Henry, Dan Toshoshny, Larry Wellman, I'm forgetting people, Jim McLaughlin, Wilbur Klein, all here to work to bring the congregation to this new home. My dad was often here too, much more than I was. I recall him pointing out to me that Dr. McClune, who I know was here as often as anyone, put up the grid work in the fellowship hall and the Sunday school rooms for the suspended ceiling. I know Dr. McClune did many other things, but this memory stuck with me because I had no understanding then and have no understanding now of how to keep those rails and runners perfectly level. My dad also was complimentary about the work Linda's brother did. Ray Kaufman did a lot of the roofing work here. He was 2 years younger than me, and what my dad told me was that Ray would come to the church on his own, working alone, starting the shingle rows at the ends of the roof surfaces, making it easier for others to fill in the shingles in between. I also know my dad thought a lot of Steve Zulovich doing the plumbing and septic work here at the church. I don't think Steve was a regular attender, but I know his wife and daughters were. Steve essentially donated his professional services in his work here. My sister Dottie got her daycare started in those days as well. I know that even at 11 or 12, she did work in the building, but she was often the babysitter watching younger kids at the parsonage while parents were working at the church. I also suspect that Dottie may have had the assistance of some older siblings, but I know that I wasn't one of them. I know there were other people here who I don't recall who made important contributions to this effort. As a glaring example, I know intuitively that as many women as men were here, and it is to my shame that I don't recall their efforts. These ladies deserve better memories from me. I'm also sure that there were other parents who brought their children who did not be babysat, I guess. My dad was not the only parent with children working in the building. This walk down memory lane for me has helped me realize what a powerful and inspiration example was set for us 40 years ago. While we owe these people our thanks, it is also useful for us to give thought to their example of what a congregation can do. Perhaps we should also consider what gifts we are leaving here for our grandchildren and others who may be here 40 years from now.
Wow. Thank you. Steve McClune is next. You saw his mom, during Great Is Thy Faithfulness, trying to clean up before that initial first memorial service. They had a first service in the building, and then in May, they actually had the grand opening service. And Jane was out there cleaning windows and making sure things. So, Steve, you get to be her kind of spokesperson at this point.
Different form of type notes. I was a teenager then. I'd like to say I was a baby 40 years ago, but I was a teenager, so I didn't get out here too many Saturday mornings. Probably didn't get out of bed too many Saturday mornings then. I was 15 to 16 when all this happened, but I always remember that. I've always remembered that there weren't workmen. There weren't professional roofers and bricklayers and I forgot what else I was going to say, but it was all the people in the church doing this. Oh, and the painters. And I remember coming out shingling on one occasion with my father. I guess these all would have been Saturdays. I don't know how you got me out of bed on Saturday mornings, but I really don't. Not like now when, due to genetics, I get up at 5. Then I didn't, but I remember shingling the roof, and there was just a lot of men out there, but I remember my father being there, and I remember Linda's father being there, and those are the two I remember. There were a lot of men there, but just being a teenager, I got to hand shingles up to people. You know, they won't actually let you on the roof. You don't actually get to pound the hammer. You hand the shingles up. So I did that, and I can remember coming into the coming into this room, and the women were painting the ceiling up on the scaffolding. I don't know that I would have done that, but they were doing that. I remember Dave's mom, Sandy, being up on the scaffolding, and that amazes me still. That's a long way up there. Lou mentioned Larry Finazzo. I remember Larry, and I think it was his father-in-law, laying block. I can remember that coming through here when the walls and the rest of the church were about that high, and they were in the bathroom area laying block in those areas. And then the pastor at the time, Pastor Dahlquist, apparently had some experience as a window glazer, installing windows. So one Saturday when I came out, I was unpacking and carrying windows to him while he put the windows in the fellowship hall. Did that right up until I stepped on the nail. Then I got the rest of the afternoon off. That was, I think there were many nails I stepped on that summer. I've always had a problem paying attention, I guess. And still, but probably the strongest memory from that time, it's the people doing the work on the church, and they did all the work on the church. But I remember the grounds here around the building as they were finishing up were, it was a lot of dirt and a lot of rock. There was a lot of rock. And someone in the church decided it would be great fun for the teens to come out and pick up all the rocks one Saturday. And adults being the way they are, they decided to call it a rock party. They were having a rock party for the teens at the church. They thought that was so funny. Not the teens. Yeah, that was real witty. I found out that week that the college dining hall was hiring 16-year-olds. So I went to the dining hall, and I remember interviewing with this woman who was probably a college student. And she asked if I could start on Saturday. And knowing I had an obligation at church, I said, yes. Yes, I can. So I missed the one and only rock party they've ever had at this church. But that was it. It's the people. The people built the church. That never really sank into me until I started thinking about this, about how we did everything.
There's a good perspective on building. Probably a thought to go, not to really top anybody else. God builds his church. We may build the buildings, but God builds his church. And that's what we want to give him praise for.